Chapter 7. A Departure. Yawning in the early morning grayness, Egwene pulled herself up onto her fog-colored mare, then had to handle her reins smartly as mist frisked about. The animal had not been ridden in weeks. Aiel not only preferred their own legs, they avoided riding almost completely, though they did use pack horses and pack mules. Even if there had been enough wood to build wagons, the terrain in the waste was not hospitable to wheels, as more than one peddler had learned, to his or her sorrow. She was not looking forward to the long journey west. The mountains hid the sun now, but the heat would grow by the hour once it climbed clear, and there would be no convenient tent to duck into at nightfall. She was not certain that Aiel garb was suitable for riding, either. The shawl worn over her head always did a surprisingly good job of keeping the sun off, but those bulky skirts would bare her legs to the thigh if she was not careful. Blisters worried her as much as modesty. The sun on one side, and a month out of the saddle should not have softened her that much. She hoped it had not, or this would be a very long journey. Once she had settled Mist down, Egwene found Amice looking at her, and shared a smile with the wise one. All of that running the night before was not the reason she was still sleepy. If anything, it had helped her sleep even more soundly. She had found the other woman's dreams last night, and in celebration they had sipped tea in the dream, in Cold Rock's hold, early on an evening when children were playing among the crop-planted terraces, and a pleasant breeze blew down the valley as the sun sank. Of course, that would not have been enough to steal her rest, but she had been so exultant that when she left Amice's dreams she did not stop. She could not then, no matter what Amice would have said. There had been dreams all around, though with most she had no idea whose they were. With most, not all. Milane had been dreaming of suckling a babe at her breast, and bear of one of her dead husbands, both of them young and yellow-haired. She had been especially careful not to enter those. The wise ones would have known an intruder in an instant, and she shuddered to think of what they would have done before letting her go. Rand's dreams had been a challenge, of course, one she could not fail to face. Now that she could flit from dream to dream, how could she not try where the wise ones failed? Only, attempting to enter his dreams had been like running headlong into an invisible stone wall. She knew that his dreams lay on the other side, and she was sure she could find a way through, but there'd been nothing to work on, nothing to pry at, a wall of nothing. It was a problem she meant to worry at until she solved it. Once she put her mind on something, she could be as persistent as a badger. All around her, Guy Shine were bustling about, loading the Wise One's camp onto mules. Before long, only an Aiel or someone just as skilled at tracking would be able to tell there had ever been tents on that patch of hard clay. The same activity covered the surrounding mountain slopes, and the hubbub extended into the city as well. Not everyone would be going, but thousands would. Aiel thronged the streets, and Master Kader's train of wagons stood strung out along the great plaza, laden with Moiraine's selections, the three white-painted water wagons at the end of the line, like huge barrels on wheels, behind 20 mule teams. Kader's own wagon at the head of the column was a little white house on wheels, with steps at the back and a metal stovepipe sticking out of the flat roof. The thick, hawk-nosed merchant, all in ivory-colored silk today, swept off his incongruously battered hat as she rode past, his dark, tilted eyes not sharing in the wide smile he flashed at her. She ignored him frostily. His dreams had been decidedly dark and unpleasant, where they were not lewd as well. He ought to have his head dunked in a cask of blue-spine tea, she thought grimly. Approaching the roof of the maidens, she threaded her way through scurrying Guy Shine and patiently standing mules. To her surprise, one of those loading the maidens' things wore a black robe, not white. A woman by the size of her, and staggering under the weight of a cord-tied bundle on her back. Bending as she guided Mist past to get a look inside the woman's cowl, Egwene saw Isendra's haggard face, sweat already rolling down her cheeks. She was glad the maidens had stopped letting the woman go outside, or sending her out, more naked than not, but it did seem needlessly cruel to robe her in black. If she was sweating so hard already, she would nearly die once the day's heat took hold. Still, far Darai's my business was none of hers. Avienda had told her so, gently but firmly. Adelin and Enila had been little short of rude about it, and a wiry white-haired maiden named Sulin had actually threatened to haul her back to the Wise Ones by her ear. Despite her efforts to persuade Avienda to stop addressing her as Aes Sedai, it had been irritating to find that after walking a fine line of uncertainty toward her, the rest of the maidens had come down on the side of her being just another pupil of the Wise Ones. Why, they would not even let her pass the door of the roof unless she claimed to be on an errand. The quickness with which she heeled mist on through the crowd had nothing to do with acceptance of Far Darai's my justice, or her uncomfortable awareness that some of the maidens were eyeing her, no doubt ready to lecture if they thought she intended to interfere. It even had little to do with her dislike of Isendra. She did not want to think about her glimpse of the woman's dreams just before Coenda had come to rouse her. They had been nightmares of torture, of things being done to the woman that sent Egwene fleeing in horror, and with something dark and evil laughing as it watched her run. No wonder Isendra looked haggard. Egwene had started up out of her sleep so quickly that Coenda had jumped back from laying a hand on her shoulder. Rand was in the street in front of the maiden's roof, wearing a shufa against the coming sun and a blue silk coat with enough gold embroidery to befit a palace, though it hung open halfway down the front. His belt had a new buckle, an elaborate thing shaped like a dragon. He really was beginning to think a great deal of himself, that was clear. Standing beside Giadaan, his dappled stallion, he was talking with the clan chiefs and some of the Aiel traders who would be staying in Roydion. Jacin Natael, nearly at Rand's heels with his harp on his back and holding the reins of a saddled mule bought from Master Kader, was even more elaborately dressed, with silver embroidery nearly hiding his black coat and spills of white lace at his neck and cuffs. Even his boots were worked in silver where they turned down at the knee. The gleeman's cloak with its patches did spoil the effect, but gleemen were odd folk. The male traders wore the Cadin Sor, and though their belt knives were smaller than those of warriors, Egwene knew they could all handle a spear if called to. They had something, if not all, of the deadly grace of their brothers who carried the spear. The women traders in loose white algoda blouses and full woolen skirts, headscarves and shawls were more easily distinguishable. Except for maidens and Gaishine and Avienda, Aiel women all wore multiple bracelets and necklaces of gold and ivory, silver and gemstones, some of Aiel make, some traded for, and some looted. Among Aiel traders, though, the women displayed twice as many, if not more. She caught part of what Rand was telling the traders. "Give the Ogier stonemasons a free hand on some of what they build, at least, on as much as you can make yourselves. There's no point in just trying to remake the past." So he was having them send to the Steading for Ogier to rebuild Roydion. That was good. Much of Tar Valon was Ogier work, and where they were left to their own devices, their buildings were enough to take the breath away. Matt was already up on his gelding pips, with his wide-brimmed hat pulled down and the butt of that odd spear resting on his stirrup. As usual, his high-collared green coat looked slept in. She had avoided his dreams. One of the maidens, a very tall, golden-haired woman, gave Matt a roguish grin that seemed to embarrass him. And well it should. She was much too old for him. Egwene sniffed. "I know very well what he was dreaming about, thank you very much." She only reined in beside him to look around for Avienda. "He told her to be quiet. And she did," he said as she halted mist. He nodded toward Moiraine and Lan, she in pale blue silk, gripping the reins of her white mare, and he in his warder's cloak, holding his great black warhorse. Lan was watching Moiraine intently, expressionless as always, while she looked ready to burst with impatience as she glared at Rand. She started telling him why this is the wrong thing to do. Sounded to me like she was saying it for the 100th time, and he said, "I've decided, Moiraine, stand over there and be quiet till I have time for you," like he expected her to do as she was told. And she did. Is that steam coming out of her ears? His chortle was so pleased, so amused at his own wit, that she nearly embraced Sayidar and taught him a lesson right there in front of everybody. Instead, she sniffed again, loudly enough to let him know it was for him and his wit and his amusement. He gave her a wry, sidelong look and chuckled again, which did nothing for her temper. For a moment she stared at Moiraine, perplexed. The Aes Sedai had done as Rand told her, without protest? That was like one of the wise ones obeying, or the sun rising at midnight. She had heard about the attack, of course. Rumors about giant dogs that left footprints on stone had been all over this morning. She could not see what that could have to do with this, but aside from the news of the Shaido, it was the only new thing she knew of, and not enough to produce this reaction. Nothing could produce it that she could think of. Doubtless Moiraine would tell her it was none of her concern, but one way or another she would worry it out. She did not like not understanding things. Spotting Avienda, standing on the bottom step of the roof, she guided Mist around to the other side of the crowd near Rand. The Aiel woman was staring at him as hard as the Aes Sedai did, but with absolutely no expression. She kept turning the ivory bracelet on her wrist over and over, apparently without realizing it. Somehow or other, that bracelet was part of the difficulty the woman was having with him. Egwene did not understand. Avienda refused to talk about it, and she could not just ask someone else, not when it might embarrass her friend. Her own flame-carved ivory bracelet was a gift from Avienda, to seal them as near sisters. Her return gift had been the silver necklace the other woman wore, which Master Kader claimed was a Kandori pattern called Snowflakes. She'd had to ask Moiraine for enough money, but it had seemed appropriate for a woman who would never see snow. Or would not have, if she was not leaving the waste. Small chance that she could return before winter. Whatever that bracelet meant, Egwene was confident she could puzzle it out eventually. "Are you all right?" she asked. As she leaned out of her high-cantled saddle, her skirts shifted till her legs showed, but she was concerned enough with her friend to hardly notice. She had to repeat the question before Avienda gave a start and stared up at her. "All right? Of course I am." "Let me speak to the wise ones, Avienda. I'm sure I can convince them that they cannot just make you—" She could not make herself say it, not out here where anyone in the crowd might hear. "Does that still worry you?" Avienda shifted her gray shawl and gave a small shake of her head. "Your customs are still very strange to me." Her eyes drifted back to Rand, like iron filings drawn to a lodestone. "You do not have to be afraid of him." "I am not afraid of any man," the other woman snapped, eyes flashing blue-green fire. "I want no trouble between us, Egwene, but you should not say such things." Egwene sighed. Friend or not, Avienda was quite capable of trying to box her ears when offended enough. In any case, she was not sure she would have admitted it either. Avienda's dream had been too painful to watch for long. Naked but for that ivory bracelet and that seeming to drag at her as if it weighed 100 pounds, Avienda had been running as hard as she could across a cracked clay flat. And behind her, Rand came, a giant, twice the size of an ogier, on a huge geoden, slowly but inexorably catching up. "But you could not simply tell a friend that she was lying." Egwene's face reddened slightly. "Especially not when you would have to tell her how you knew." "She would box my ears then. I won't do it again. Go rummaging about in people's dreams. Not in Avienda's dreams, anyway." It was not right to spy on a friend's dreams. Not that it was spying exactly, but still. The crowd around Rand was beginning to break up. He swung into his saddle easily, imitated promptly by Natale. One of the traders, a broad-faced, flame-haired woman wearing a small fortune in worked gold, cut gems, and carved ivory, lingered, though. "Karakarn, do you mean to leave the threefold land forever? You have spoken as if you will never return." The others stopped at that and turned back. Silence spread on an expanding ripple of murmurs telling what had been asked. For a moment Rand was silent as well, looking around at the faces turned to him. At last he said, "I hope to return, but who can say what will happen? The wheel weaves as the wheel wills." He hesitated with every eye on him. "But I will leave you something to remember me by," he added, sticking a hand in his coat pocket. Abruptly a fountain near the roof burst to life, water gushing from the mouths of incongruous porpoises standing on their tails. Beyond that, a statue of a young man with a horn raised to the sky suddenly was putting up a spreading fan, and then two stone women farther on were casting sprays of water from their hands. In stunned stillness, the Aiel watched as all the fountains of Roydian flowed once more. "I should have done that long since." Rand's mutter was no doubt meant for himself, but in the hush Egwene could hear him quite clearly. The splash of hundreds of fountains was the only other sound. Natale shrugged, as if he had expected no less. It was at Rand that Egwene stared, not the fountains. A man who could channel. Rand. He still ran, despite everything. But each time she saw him do it was like learning that he could all over again. Growing up, she had been taught that only the Dark One was more to be feared than a man who could channel. Maybe Avienda's right to be afraid of him. But when she looked down at Avienda, open wonder shone on her face. So much water delighted the Aiel woman, as the finest silk dress might have Egwene, or a garden full of flowers. "It is time to march," Rand announced, reining the Dapple westward. "Anyone who isn't ready will have to catch up." Natale followed close behind on the mule. Why did Rand let such a bootlicker stay near him? The clan chiefs immediately began passing orders, and the bustle increased tenfold. Maidens and water-seekers darted ahead, and more Far Dari's Mai closed around Rand as a guard of honor, incidentally enclosing Natale. Avienda strode beside Giadan, right at Rand's stirrup, easily matching the stallion stride for stride, even in her bulky skirts. Falling in beside Matt, behind Rand and his escort, Egwene frowned. Her friend wore that look of grim determination again, as if she had to put her arm into a viper den. "I have to do something to help her." Egwene did not give up on a problem once she had her teeth into it. Settling herself in her saddle, Moiraine patted Aldib's arched neck with a gloved hand, but she did not immediately follow Rand. Hadnan Kader was bringing his wagons up the street, driving the lead wagon himself. She should have made him tear that wagon down to carry cargo as she had the other like it. The man was frightened enough of her, of Aes Sedai, to have done it. The door-frame Turangrial was lashed firmly in the wagon behind Kader, canvas tied over it tightly, so no one could fall through by accident again. A long line of Aiel, Sayadun, Black Eyes, strode along on either side of the wagon train. Kader bowed to her from the driver's seat, but her gaze swept on down the line of wagons, all the way to the great square surrounding the forest of slim glass columns, already sparkling in the morning light. She would have taken everything in the plaza if she could, rather than the small fraction that would fit into the wagons. Some were too large, like the three dull gray metal rings, each more than 2 paces across, standing on edge and joined at the middle. A braided leather rope had been strung around that one, to warn all from entering without the Wise One's permission. Not that anyone was likely to, of course. Only the clan chiefs and the Wise Ones entered that square with any sense of ease. Only the Wise Ones touched anything, and they with something approaching proper reticence. For countless years, the second test faced by an Aiel woman who wanted to be a wise one had been to enter the array of glittering glass columns, seeing exactly what the men saw. More women survived it than men. Bear said it was because women were tougher. Amis that those too weak to survive were winnowed out before reaching that point, but it was not a certainty. Those who did survive were not marked. The wise ones claimed that only men needed visible signs. For a woman to be alive was enough. The first test, the first winnowing before any training even, was to step through one of those three rings. Which one did not matter, or perhaps the choice was a matter of fate. That step seemingly took her through her life again and again, her future spread out before her, all of the possible futures based on every decision she might make for the rest of her life. Death was possible in those, too. Some women could not face the future any more than others could face the past. All possible futures were too many for a mind to retain, of course. They jumbled together and faded away for the most part, but a woman gained a sense of things that would happen in her life, that must happen, that might happen. Usually even that was hidden until the moment was on her. Not always, though. Moiraine had been through those rings. A spoonful of hope and a cup of despair, she thought.
I do not like seeing you like this, Lan said.
From Mandarb's back and his own height, he looked down on her, disquiet creasing the corners of his eyes. For him, that was near tears of frustration from another man. Aiel streamed by on both sides of their horses, and Gaishine with pack animals. Moiraine was startled to realize that Kader's water wagons had already gone by. She had not realized she had been staring at the plaza for so long. Like what? She asked, turning her mare to join the throng. Rand and his escort were already out of the city.
Worried, he said bluntly, no readable expression on that stone-carved face now. Afraid. I've never seen you afraid. Not when we had Trollocs and Murdral swarming over us. Not even when you learned the Forsaken were loose and Samael was sitting almost on top of us. Is the end coming?
She gave a start, and immediately wished she had not. He was looking straight ahead over his stallion's ears, but the man never missed anything. Sometimes she thought he could see a leaf fall behind his back.
Do you mean Tarman Gaiden? A red bird in Silizin knows as well as I. The light send, not so long as any of the seals remain unbroken.
The pair she had were on one of Kader's wagons, too, each packed by itself in a cask stuffed with wool. A different wagon than the redstone doorframe, she had made sure of that.
What else could I mean?
He asked slowly, still not looking at her and making her wish she had bitten her tongue.
You have become impatient. I can remember when you could wait weeks for one tiny scrap of information, one word, without twitching a finger. But now...
He did look at her then, a blue-eyed gaze that would have intimidated most women, and most men as well.
The oath you gave to the boy, Moiraine. Whatever under the light possessed you.
He has been drawing further and further away from me, Lan, and I must be close to him. He needs whatever guidance I can give, and I will do everything short of sharing his bed to see that he gets it.
The rings had told her that that would be a disaster. Not that she had ever considered it, the very idea still shocked her, but in the rings it was something she would or could have considered in the future. It was a measure of her growing desperation, no doubt, and in the rings she had seen that it would bring ruination on everything. She wished she could remember how. There were the keys to Randall Thor in anything she could learn about him, but only the simple fact of calamity remained in her mind.
Perhaps it will help your humility grow if he tells you to fetch his slippers and light his pipe.
She stared at him.
Could that be a joke?
If so, it was not amusing. She had never found that humility served very well in any situation. Swan claimed that growing up in the Sun Palace in Kyrian had put arrogance deeply into Moiraine's bones, where she could not even see it, something she firmly denied.
But for all that Swan was a tyrant fisherman's daughter, she could match any queen stare for stare, and to her, arrogance meant opposition to her own plans. If Lan was attempting jokes, however feeble and wrong-headed, he was changing. For nearly 20 years he had followed her and saved her life more times than she cared to count, often at great risk to his own. Always he had accounted his life a small thing, valuable only for her need of it. Some said he wooed death the way a bridegroom wooed his bride. She had never held his heart, and never felt jealousy toward the women who seemed to throw themselves at his feet. He had long claimed that he had no heart, but he had found one this past year, found it when a woman tied it on a string to hang around her neck. He denied her, of course. Not his love for Nynaeve Almira, once a wisdom in the Two Rivers and now an accepted of the White Tower, but that he could ever have her. He had two things, he said, a sword that would not break and a war that could not end. He would never gift a bride with those. That, at least, Moiraine had taken care of, though he would not know how until it was done. If he did, he would very probably try to change matters, stubborn fool man that he could be. This arid land seems to have withered your own humility, Al Lan Mandragoran. I shall have to find some water to make it grow again. My humility is honed to razor sharpness, he told her dryly. You never let it grow too dull. Wetting a white scarf from his leather water bottle, he handed her the sodden cloth. She tied it around her temples without comment. The sun was beginning to rise above the mountains behind them, a searing ball of molten gold. The thick columns snaked up the barren side of Cheyendair, its tail still in Rhydion when its head had crested the slope, then down onto rough hilly flats dotted with rock spires and flat-topped buttes, some streaked with red or ochre through the grey or brown. The air was so clear that Moiraine could see for miles, even after they were down off Cheyendair. Great natural arches reared, and in every direction jagged mountains clawed at the sky. Dry gullies and hollows split a land sparsely dotted with low thorny bushes and leafless spiny plants. The rare tree, gnarled and stunted, usually bore spines or thorns as well. The sun made it an oven, a hard land that had shaped a hard people. But Lan was not the only one changing, or being changed. She wished she could see what Rand would make of the Aiel in the end. There was a long journey ahead for everyone.